Big Z Sports on 99.9 WTUZ.
Back on the Big Z Sports Show on Z Country 99.9. Joe Geckler, Eric McElroy. If you want to participate in the program tonight, jump on our Facebook page, WTUZ Big Z Sports. Follow us on Twitter at @big_Z Sports. And, of course, the Weaver Appliance text line at 330-339-9399. Eric, it's now time to talk a little college basketball. And we're going to welcome in our guy from Cincinnati, Mo Egger, from ESPN 1530 and 700 WLW. Mo, have you recovered from last weekend?
Define recovered.
Are you sane?
No, not at all. I mean, that wasn't the case to begin with. I am recuperating gradually. Maybe by the end of this weekend, I will be able to function fully.
All right, Mo, we're going to relive the madness a week ago, okay? So bear with us a little bit. I was in a studio with you back in the early 2000s, maybe late 90s, when Kenyon Martin broke his leg. Was that loss as bad as that on last Friday?
Great question.
Well, you know, the Kenyon Martin thing was an incident, you know, the Kenyon Martin leg break. I was dumb enough to think, you know what, these guys will still make a run. And I'm not one of those that says, boy, if he would have been okay, they would have won the national championship. I mean, if there's ever been evidence that you can never assume anything, it's this year's tournament. And so, but I remember thinking like, okay, that was their chance. That was their shot. That might have been their only chance in my lifetime to see them win a national championship. And I didn't feel necessarily as good about this particular UC team's chance of winning a title. But think of how much time had passed from then till now. 18 years, almost two decades, and everything the program had been through, a bunch of highs and a lot of lows, but it really hasn't experienced large-scale postseason success. You know, in 2000, I had at least seen the Bearcats in the Final Four somewhat recently. I had seen them in the Elite Eight, you know, relatively recently. I had seen them be number one in the country. So, you know, I had lived pretty good as a Bearcat fan in the 90s. Over the last 17 years, they've made the Sweet 16 one time. We had to endure what happened with the program when they transitioned from Bob Huggins to Mick Cronin. They've had to endure jumping into the Big East and then being essentially kicked out of the Big East. They've had heartbreaking losses. This felt like a year where things were starting to go their way. And let's face it, it's hard to be seated that highly when you're coming out of the American Athletic Conference. So I kind of viewed this as their one shot. Their one shot, maybe not to win a national title, maybe not even to get to a Final Four, but to at least play in the second weekend. And, you know, when you kind of look at the future of the program, they're stuck in a league they don't want to be in. They're going to lose some very, very good players from this year's team. I think there's been a feeling by UC fans of, if not now, then when? And for a good 30 minutes last Sunday night of game time, I thought, it's going to be now. And instead, we're still left wondering when.
Yeah. Mo Egger from ESPN in Cincinnati. Mo, you mentioned the dark days there for a minute, but I honestly think those are kind of behind Bearcat fans. I mean, I think the future is a little brighter than that. But, hey, to go back to that game against Nevada, we all know throughout the season, especially on neutral sites and away games, Cincinnati's offense struggled a time or two. Is that simply what it was in that second half, blowing that 22-point lead? I mean, what exactly happened, Mo?
Well, they got up by 22 points, and they started taking – the first thing that happened is they started taking terrible shots. If you go back and watch, if you're a UC fan and you want to torture yourself, you see Jaron Cumberland early in the shot clock take a three that he shouldn't have taken. You see Kyle Washington early in the shot clock take a three that he shouldn't have taken. Those shots resulted in long rebounds. Nevada, with some pretty quick guards, you know, they were able to get out in transition and make shots, and it cut into the lead just a little bit. But once they started scoring, they were able to set up their defense. And what they did is they basically said, we're going to double-team Jacob Evans, and we're going to play 3-on-4. And now let's see if Cincinnati can adjust. And no one else stepped up. But I actually think what betrayed them maybe even a little bit more than their offense was their defense. They gave up 32 points in the final 10 and a half minutes. This has been, you know, arguably the second best defensive team in the country all year long. That's what they hang their hat on. You figure if they get a 22-point lead, maybe they're not going to extend it to 30 or 40. But they're not going to let you close in on them. And so for this defense to give up 32 points in that stretch is, you know, really pretty remarkable. But even despite that, you know, the sequence that kind of sticks in my mind, there are two of them. One, they had a 5-point lead with about, 2 minutes and 10 seconds to go during control of the game. And you're thinking, okay, roll 30 seconds off the clock and kick the ball into the stands and at least kill 30 seconds. Or even better, score. Go up 7, go up 8. Well, Kane Broome commits an offensive foul. And I've gone back and watched, and I think it was a good call. I was in the arena at the time. I didn't think it was a good call. I think they got it right. That, to me, is where they had a chance to really, you know, maybe not close Nevada out, but really make it difficult for them to come back. Well, what do? They get the ball. The Bearcats are kind of flustered. They come back and score. And the other sequence I think that stands out to me more than anything is with the game tied, the Bearcats force a miss, and the ball is coming right towards Gary Clark, and one of the best rebounders in the country doesn't grab the rebound. And he's one of the most reliable players on this team. You expect him to grab that ball. He didn't. They score, and the rest, unfortunately, is history.
Mo, let's go back into that game a little bit. I was watching, and was it Jared Cumberland that picked up his fourth foul, and then Mick decided to leave him in? Was that Cumberland or was that Washington?
It was Cumberland. He got his fourth foul with about 5.5 to go, and you know, a lot of coaches there are going to sit their guy, and I certainly would have understand had Mick put Jaron on the bench, tried to get to maybe the under 4 minute an immediate timeout. But look, he's thinking, I built two different leads with Jaron Cumberland on the court. I'm going to go for the kill here. I mean, he was at that point, he's up by 6 or 8 points. And I think at that point, he's going, look, I want to end this bad boy right now. I don't want to worry about the last 2 minutes. And he left a guy who had been arguably his best player in the first 12, 13 minutes of the game on the court. It's not what I would have done, but I could understand his thinking. The bigger deal to me when it came to Jaron was he picked up his first foul with 7:50 left in the first half. He picked up his second foul with 7:30 left in the first half. Neither were remotely necessary fouls. The second one put him on the bench for the final 7.5 minutes. Then Gary Clark gets his second. And I felt like at the half they were up by 12 points, but I'm thinking, man, if those guys are on the court together, Jacob Evans doesn't have to play 1-on-5. They're not settling for, you know, some threes from Jacob Evans because he's playing 1-on-5. This 12-point lead is maybe 18, perhaps 20, and that's going to be really hard for them to come back, especially if the Cats do what they did early in the second half, which was to add to the lead. And so, you know, Mick has gotten a lot of criticism for that decision. I understand it. I understand what he was doing. The bigger deal to me is the fact that Jaron Cumberland and Gary Clark, you expect sometimes Jaron to get into foul trouble. You don't expect it from Gary. Those two guys ending the half, having to sit on the bench, Jaron the final 7.5, Gary the final 5.5, I think that came back to haunt him.
Well, UC fell to Nevada 75-73 in a heartbreak way. They were up 22 points. Mo, 30 minutes after that game, did you stay in the arena and watch the Xavier Musketeers as they struggled against Florida State all night? What did you think of Xavier's performance?
You know, I thought it was very uneven for the first 30 minutes, and yet it felt like they were in control of the game. You know, there were 8 lead changes in the first half, and I felt like at halftime, God, they kind of dodged some bullets here. In the second half of the game, the better team with the best player on the court is going to take over. And, you know, if you go back to last year's NCAA tournament run, Trayvon Blewett averaged 25 points in their 3 wins, all against higher-seeded teams, including a 29-point game against Florida State. He was absent last Sunday. If he shows up, they win. Trayvon Blewett, an All-American, took 8 shots. Not only did he not take shots, he had 5 turnovers. That cannot happen. And look, it's Xavier was a better team this year than last year, but their formula against good teams was pretty much the same. Trayvon Blewett's going to have to carry us. J.P. McCure is going to have to be his wingman. J.P. scored, but he got into foul trouble. And then it just kind of felt to me like they – I don't want to say they panicked. I think, if anything, they looked like they sort of lacked urgency on offense in the final 5 or 6 minutes, where Florida State's making a run, and I'm thinking if Blewett just gets a bucket, it stops the run, it calms everything down, and they're going to be okay, and they just weren't able to get it. And, you know, much like for me, Gary Clark can't only take 6 shots for Cincinnati. Trayvon Blewett can't take only 8 shots, and when you're down by three in the final seconds, if I'm going down as a number one seed, the last shot I take is going to be more than an airballed three from Karen Kanter. It's going to be something for Trayvon Blewett, and instead, that ended up being the shot that sealed Xavier's season, and it was a massive disappointment for a Musketeers team that kind of the same thing, you know, we've thought of with the Bearcats. If Xavier's ever going to get to a Final Four, and I think they're the best program over the last 30 years to not be in the Final Four, if it's ever going to happen, this felt like the year, and obviously that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, Mo, I certainly had him there in the Final Four in my bracket. But listen, we all know how brackets are going this time of year. You mentioned, first thing, I'm sure you anticipated following a couple teams there, Cincinnati, Xavier, maybe even this weekend. Those plans obviously didn't go according to the way you wanted them to. And then you mentioned certain things that you haven't seen the Bearcats do in your lifetime yet. And then on Friday, earlier in the tournament last week, for the first time ever, we saw a 16 beat a 1. Did you ever in your life think you'd see that?
You know, it's funny because people for years have said, you know, one day it's going to happen, and then the bracket comes out, and nobody picks the same. You know, I mean, for years people have been like, well, you know, it's never happened, but one day it will. Well, what about this year? Nah. So, you know, I've always subscribed to the belief that, you know, when the bracket comes out, no one is going to pick any of those teams. No one will. No one will have the stones to say Maryland, Baltimore County is going to beat Virginia. So
only those people who fill out like eight brackets would do something like
that.
Nobody has
exactly.
time for that. Yeah.
But you're also thinking if it ever does happen, it's going to be, you know, shot at the buzzer, weird bounce, odd play, close game decided in the final minutes. That thing was over with 5 minutes to go, which was startling to me. I didn't necessarily think Virginia was going to get to the Sweet 16. As a matter of fact, I picked Kentucky to go to the Final Four. But for Maryland, Baltimore County to have their way with Virginia the way they did, and look, this was the regular season ACC champion. This was the ACC tournament champion. They won that league decisively. They won at Duke. They beat Carolina on a neutral court. They won that league going away. To get beat by that team is a remarkable accomplishment by Maryland Baltimore County. And I thought maybe I'd see a 16 seed team win. I don't think I ever thought I'd see a 16 seed win by 20 points.
Yeah, good call.
Well, Mo, obviously there's some other rumors going on down in Cincinnati right now. I believe Chris Mack was in Louisville over the last couple of days to meet with the Cardinals. Your thoughts on Chris Mack possibly going to Louisville, and have you heard anything?
He's going to be in Louisville this weekend. He's going to be meeting with them, and I think we're going to know by the end of the weekend whether he's going to stay or go. Look, Xavier really can't do anything here because they already pay him very, very well. It's not like they have a deep treasure chest of money to pay a guy in order to convince him to stay. They've got great facilities. They're in a great league. They've got great fan support. Chris has every recruiting advantage you could ask for in that league. This is about, first of all, money. Let's not kid ourselves. Louisville can pay more than almost any school in the country. This is about a program having maybe a better chance of winning a national championship than Xavier does. Now, there's obvious, NCAA uncertainties hovering over that program, but at face value, I think a lot of people would conclude the University of Louisville represents a better chance to win a national championship. And then there's the pull of family. Chris Mack's wife is from Louisville. Now, Chris is from Cincinnati, so you know, ultimately, is the pull of going to live near his in-laws stronger and making more money, stronger than the comfort of home and being close to his family? You know, a lot of people seem to think that it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to go. I would guess that he is, but I'm not as certain as some. Chris is, he's a different guy. To me, he's certainly enticed by money, but he's not driven by it. He's a very much a family person. He's very much a Cincinnati guy. I think if Xavier lost him, it would be a step back for the program, not just because they're going to lose a very good coach, but think of the perception that that's going to add to. People already believe, you know, because Xavier cycled through so many coaches that it's a little bit of a stepping stone program. What would it say, maybe if you're looking at it from the outside, you have a coach who's from here. He's the all-time winningest coach at Xavier. He's from here. He went there. He went to that school. and he's going to leave to go coach at a university that's at the center of an FBI probe. Now, there's lots of reasons why I could understand him going to Louisville, but I also get how that would look. And so that look is going to build the perception that Xavier is not a destination job, even though Chris Mack has been there for 9 years, and he's kind of made it a destination job.
In your gut, coming, if I talk to you Monday morning, what does Chris Mack do?
I think if you talk to me on Monday morning, he's going to be the new head coach at the University of Louisville. But I've talked to a lot of people close to Chris, and I know him reasonably well. I don't believe it's as open and shut as, here's the dollar figure, you're coming to Louisville, and he says yes. I think it's going to be, here's the dollar figure, and I think, honestly, I think they already know what the, I think he's actually already been offered the job, if you want to be honest. But I think this is a conversation with him and his wife about a position they're very happy in, they're very comfortable with their lives here, versus what might lie ahead at Louisville. And there's lots of good there, but there's also some uncertainties. And so I think it's going to be a little bit of a tougher decision for Chris than people are characterizing it out to be. But ultimately, I just think that job, look, Chris Mack, since well before Rick Pitino was blown out, people have thought if he's ever going to leave Xavier, that's one of the handful of jobs he would leave for. So this has always been something that's been on our radar here, and I'm sure his radar to an extent, and now it's becoming very, very real. My guess is that he's going to go, but I don't think it's the slam dunk that so many people here think it is. I think he's really going to wrestle with this, but I do think ultimately he is going to end up being the new head coach at the University of Louisville.
In about 30 seconds, Mo, if he does leave a couple candidates for that Xavier job, who do you think?
Well, the Xavier way has always been to hire from within. The difference is they have a different athletic director who's never hired a head coach at X. So, you know, you're going to hear the name Travis Steele, who's on the staff now. You're going to hear the name Luke Pegues, or Mike Pegues, who's on the staff now. You're also going to hear the name Pat Kelsey, who's the head coach at Winthrop and went to Xavier. Yep. The name that I think is fascinating is I'd call that dude at Loyola, Porter Moser, and see if he's interested in coaching in the Big East.
There you go, Mo.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey, also, switch gears on you real fast. The Reds just announced Homer Bailey to start opening day. You okay with that?
Kind of running out of choices. De Sclafani's hurt. Finnegan's hurt. Castillo had to miss time this spring to go be there for the birth of his kid. So this is as much about just somebody's got to do it. Might as well be Homer as it is about merit.
Gotcha. Mo, have a great weekend, buddy. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Mo Egger from ESPN 1530 and 700 WLW in Cincinnati, joining us here to talk college basketball. Wow, he had a range of emotions last week.
Yeah,
didn't he
did. Always informative, too. Mo always provides great intel, if you will.
He does. We'll come back, and we're going to catch up with Tony Grossi from ESPN Cleveland after this on Z Country 99.9.